Big news! The sale of the season is here. It's Wayfair's Black Friday sale, and it's on now. Right now, get up to 80% off everything home and everything you need for the season ahead. Save on quality furniture for every room in the house. Essentials for the guest room, whether it's new bedding or a new mattress. Kitchen and dining must-haves for all your hosting needs. And seasonal home finds like throw pillows and decor. Or favorites that you'll use all year long. And with amazing doorbuster deals from November 27th through December 2nd, you can shop the things you love at even lower prices at Wayfair. Plus, you can sit back and relax with Wayfair's fast and easy shipping. Everything home comes straight to your home. And the best part? Free delivery just in time for the holidays. This Black Friday, Wayfair deals are bigger and better than ever. There's no place like home for the holidays. And no place like Wayfair for Black Friday savings. So don't wait. Black Friday ends soon. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday sale now and save up to 80% off at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here! Right now, get up to 80% off everything you need for the season ahead. Save on kitchen and dining, bedroom furniture and mattresses, seasonal decor, and way more. All at Wayfair. These are Wayfair's best deals of the year. From seasonal finds to favorites you'll use all year long. Plus, enjoy fast and free shipping with delivery in time for the holidays. Save up to 80% off during Wayfair's Black Friday sale. Now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hello, and welcome to our beginner's series on Western moral philosophy. Today, we journey back to ancient Rome to meet Marcus Aurelius, a ruler who became the embodiment of the philosopher king. Marcus Aurelius was a Roman emperor from 161 to 180 CE, renowned not only for leading the empire, but for his deep devotion to Stoic philosophy. In fact, he is often called the last of the five good emperors of Rome, and his reign later came to symbolize a Roman golden age of wisdom and justice. In this episode, we will explore the life of Marcus Aurelius, his youth as a serious student, his unexpected rise to power, the trials he faced as emperor, and we'll delve into the timeless Stoic moral insights he left for us in his personal notebook, Meditations. So get comfortable and imagine yourself in the marble halls and battle camps of the ancient world as we uncover the story of Marcus Aurelius, the emperor who tried to live a virtuous life in a troubled world.
Marcus Aurelius was not born on a throne. He was born into an influential family with a legacy of public service. Orphaned of his father at a young age, the boy Marcus, born Marcus Annius Verus, was raised by his grandfather and mother in the imperial court of Rome. His intelligence and earnest character caught the eye of Emperor Hadrian, who affectionately nicknamed him Verissimus, meaning most truthful, a playful Latin pun on his family name. Verus, to praise Marcus's honesty. This sincere child would grow into a sincere man. Even as a young boy studying with private tutors, Marcus was drawn to philosophy. He took this passion seriously, so seriously that it's said he even began dressing in a rough Greek cloak and sleeping on the floor at night to toughen himself like a Stoic philosopher, until his concerned mother urged him to return to a bed. It was clear that Marcus wasn't interested in a life of luxury. He was already practicing the Stoic ideals of self-discipline and simplicity. Marcus's life changed dramatically in 138 CE when he was adopted by his uncle, Antoninus Pius, who had just been named the next emperor. This was no ordinary adoption. It was a political act arranged by Hadrian to secure the line of succession. At just 17 years old, Marcus was suddenly an heir to the Roman Empire. Antoninus Pius took the boy under his wing, giving him a lengthy apprenticeship in governance. For the next two decades, young Marcus learned how to run an empire by watching and helping Antoninus. He attended high-level meetings, assumed public duties, and, step by step, prepared for the day when he would wear the imperial purple himself. Even alongside official duties, Marcus's heart stayed with philosophy. His imperial education included rhetoric, public speaking, under a respected teacher named Fronto. But Marcus found more meaning in the writings of Stoic sages than in flowery Latin oratory. He famously devoured the works of Epictetus, a Stoic philosopher who had been born a slave, finding in them practical wisdom and spiritual nourishment. Marcus's formal studies shifted from rhetoric to philosophy, and he surrounded himself with Stoic mentors, men like Junius Rusticus and Apollonius of Chalcedon, whom he later thanked in the first pages of his Meditations for teaching him virtue and restraint. By the time he was in his 20s, Marcus Aurelius had come to believe, as all Stoics do, that the highest good is virtue, that is, moral excellence and living in accordance with reason. Everything else, fame, wealth, even health or comfort, was secondary and indifferent in determining whether one's life was truly good. This conviction would guide him through all the challenges to come. In 145 CE, Marcus married his cousin Faustina. They would go on to have many children, at least a dozen, though tragically, most of these sons and daughters did not survive childhood. Marcus's family life was marked by frequent sorrow, a fact that surely tested his Stoic acceptance of fate. Nonetheless, he cherished his family and remained devoted to Faustina through their many years together. In 161 CE, the mantle of leadership passed to Marcus. Marcus approached this moment with genuine hesitation. He did not want power for its own sake, and even felt a horror of absolute rule. His philosophical nature inclined him to a quieter life of study, not the pomp of emperorship. But Stoicism taught Marcus that one must fulfill one's duties when fate calls. And so he accepted the throne as a responsibility rather than a prize, resolving to serve the common good as a matter of moral duty. In a remarkable display of humility and loyalty to his adoptive family, Marcus insisted on sharing imperial power with his adopted brother, Lucius Verus, making them co-emperors, something Rome had never seen before. Marcus knew that both he and Lucius had been named heirs, and his conscience would not allow him to push Lucius aside. The Senate agreed to Marcus's wish, and for the first time, two Augusti ruled as equals. In reality, the more experienced Marcus was the senior partner and the guiding hand of government. But this decision showed Marcus's character. He was not interested in hoarding power. He cared about principle and duty, honoring the plan set before him and treating his adoptive brother with fairness. Thus, at age 40, Marcus Aurelius became the most powerful man in the known world, an emperor philosopher who carried the teachings of Socrates, Zeno, and Epictetus with him onto the throne. Little did he know that his reign would soon be tested by unprecedented trials, demanding all the wisdom and resilience he could muster. No sooner had Marcus settled into his role than the Roman Empire was struck by one crisis after another. If previous emperors enjoyed years of peace and prosperity, Marcus would have no such luxury. Marcus did not meet with the good fortune that he deserved, for he was involved in a multitude of troubles throughout practically his entire reign, wrote the historian Cassius Dio. It was almost as if fate had chosen to challenge this Stoic emperor at every turn, giving him ample opportunity to practice the very philosophy he cherished. The first great test came from the East. In 161 CE, Rome's longtime rival, the Parthian Empire, invaded Roman territory in what is now Syria, igniting a fierce war. Marcus sent his co-emperor Lucius Verus to oversee the campaign, along with capable generals such as Avidius Cassius, who eventually won victories and pushed back the Parthians. But victory came with a deadly cost. The returning Roman legions carried with them a mysterious plague, likely smallpox, that began to spread like wildfire through the empire. This pandemic, known to history as the Antonine Plague, would last for years, killing untold thousands and even claimed the life of Marcus's co-ruler, Lucius Verus. Marcus Aurelius now found himself sole emperor in a time of epidemic, economic strain, and military threat. As if disease were not enough, waves of barbarian invasions crashed against the frontiers. Germanic tribes and others along the northern border took advantage of Rome's weakness, breaching the Danube frontier in massive hordes around 167 to 168 CE. Entire communities were thrown into panic as these warriors even penetrated into Italy, besieging the city of Aquileia, not far from Venice. Marcus had to act decisively. Rallying the Roman armies, he spent years personally on campaign, fighting to secure the frontier and push back the invaders. We can picture him far from the comforts of Rome, living in military camps along the freezing Danube River, directing troops by day and perhaps studying his Stoic scrolls by night in his tent. Indeed, much of Marcus Aurelius's reign was spent in the provinces, leading armies and trying to hold the empire together amid war and chaos. He was not a distant, palace-bound ruler. He was right there, in the thick of it, doing his duty as a soldier emperor, even as his health was often fragile. During one brief lull in these wars, another challenge struck from within. In 175 CE, news arrived that a powerful Roman general, the same Avidius Cassius who had helped defeat the Parthians, had rebelled in the eastern provinces and declared himself emperor. This betrayal cut deep. Cassius mistakenly believed Marcus was gravely ill or dead, and he moved to seize the throne. Marcus Aurelius, upon hearing of the rebellion, faced a defining moral test. How would the Stoic emperor respond to a usurper and traitor? With wrath and vengeance, as most rulers would, or with the wisdom and clemency he aspired to? Marcus chose the path of remarkable mercy. Instead of flying into a rage, he reportedly told his staff and his soldiers that he hoped to resolve the civil war without undue bloodshed. He planned to pardon Cassius rather than execute him if given the chance. As one account describes, Marcus addressed his troops, explaining that there was a right way to deal even with civil wars. He wanted to forgive the man who had wronged him, to remain a friend to one who had broken faith. In Marcus's own words, he sought to forgive a man who has wronged one, to remain a friend to one who has transgressed friendship, to continue faithful to one who has broken faith. Such an attitude was nearly superhuman in the context of Roman politics. This was a society where emperors were more known for ruthlessly eliminating rivals. Marcus's response was pure stoicism. He believed that evil acts by others should not provoke evil in oneself, and that the best revenge was to not become like your enemies. In the end, Marcus never met Cassius in battle. The rebel was assassinated by his own officers before Marcus arrived. On hearing that his enemy was dead, Marcus reportedly wept, not out of joy, but out of sorrow that he had lost the chance to show clemency and reconcile. Even the conspirators and senators who had sided with Cassius were spared. Marcus refused to conduct a purge. This episode shines a light on Marcus Aurelius's character. Here was an absolute ruler, one who could have executed traitors by the dozens, choosing forgiveness and understanding instead. He was living his philosophy, striving to practice the Stoic virtues of patience, justice, and kindness, even under the most difficult circumstances. All the while, Marcus endured personal heartbreaks that would have broken many people. As mentioned, many of his children died young. His beloved wife Faustina also passed away before him in 175 CE during their journey in the eastern provinces. He mourned these losses deeply. Yet Marcus tried to accept these tragedies as part of the natural order. the Stoic idea that one must welcome what happens as part of the whole plan of nature or providence. We can imagine him, in quiet moments, reminding himself that everything is transient, glory, sorrow, life itself. In one of his meditations, Marcus gently notes that even the famous heroes of old, an Alexander the Great, a Julius Caesar, and even their servants and animals, all eventually died and turned to dust. No one escapes the march of time. Reflecting on the vastness of eternity, Marcus wrote, "In this infinity, what is the difference between him who lives 3 days and him who lives 3 generations? Such words were his way of coping with loss. If a child he loved died, Marcus would strive to remember that death is a natural return. Painful, yes, but not evil in itself. Do not despise death, he advised himself, but be well content with it, since this too is one of those things which nature wills." These were not just abstract musings for Marcus Aurelius. They were lifelines, hard-won consolations that helped him persevere and continue to do his duty without falling into despair. By 177 CE, Marcus had stabilized the empire enough to take an important step. He named his surviving son, Commodus, as co-emperor. Commodus was just a teenager, but Marcus wanted to ensure a peaceful succession should he die. This decision, alas, would backfire. Commodus would rule very differently from his father, with far less wisdom. But that is a story for another day. Marcus spent his final years back up on the Danube frontier, fighting yet another campaign to repel a resurgence of barbarian invasions. It was during this grueling war that Marcus Aurelius fell ill. In March of 180 CE, Marcus died in his military camp, likely of the plague or another illness. He was 58 years old and had reigned for 19 years of nearly unceasing struggle. With his death, many historians say, the golden era of the Pax Romana, Roman peace, came to an end. The empire would soon tumble into turmoil and decline without his steady hand. The Roman army, upon losing Marcus, reputedly took it very hard. Here was a leader who had lived modestly among them, who had shared their hardships, and who had truly cared for the empire's well-being. The soldiers honored him. The Senate deified him, and even today Marcus Aurelius shines in history as a rare example of a good man who wielded great power. Amid all the battles, politics, and sorrows of his life, Marcus Aurelius carried on a very private ritual each day. He wrote, "Late at night or at
Big news! The sale of the season is here. It's Wayfair's Black Friday sale, and it's on now. Right now, get up to 80% off everything home and everything you need for the season ahead. Save on quality furniture for every room in the house. Essentials for the guest room, whether it's new bedding or a new mattress. Kitchen and dining must-haves for all your hosting needs. And seasonal home finds like throw pillows and decor. Or favorites that you'll use all year long. And with amazing doorbuster deals from November 27th through December 2nd, you can shop the things you love at even lower prices at Wayfair. Plus, you can sit back and relax with Wayfair's fast and easy shipping. Everything home comes straight to your home. And the best part? Free delivery just in time for the holidays. This Black Friday, Wayfair deals are bigger and better than ever. There's no place like home for the holidays. And no place like Wayfair for Black Friday savings. So don't wait. Black Friday ends soon. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday sale now and save up to 80% off at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Dawn, in tent or palace, the emperor would steal a few moments for himself and jot down reflections in Greek on whatever was troubling him or whatever Stoic lesson he needed to remember. These personal writings, never intended for publication or for posterity, are what we now know as the Meditations of Marcus Aurelius. Marcus simply called them to himself, and that's exactly what they were, a journal of his soul. In 12 short books of aphorisms and paragraphs, written over the last decade of his life, around 170 to 180 CE, we have the earnest voice of an emperor striving to be a good man. It is as if we have found the diary of a king, wherein he pep-talks himself, scolds himself, and comforts himself in order to uphold his principles. Generals and kings have left records of conquests, but Marcus left us something far more intimate, records of his conscience. Reading the Meditations, one is struck by how accessible and human Marcus Aurelius's thoughts are. He did not write elaborate philosophical discourses or arguments. His notes are often short, frank reminders, a kind of conversation with himself. We see a man who gets irritated with colleagues, who feels pain and fear, and who continuously brings himself back to Stoic teachings to stay on the right path. Because these writings were not meant to impress anyone, they have a raw honesty and practicality. Marcus writes as a fellow traveler in life, not as an emperor giving orders. This has made Meditations one of the most beloved works of philosophy for many generations. As one 19th century essayist put it, Marcus Aurelius was arguably the most powerful man in the world. Yet in his pages we meet someone who proved himself worthy of that power by exercising it with wisdom and virtue. It is philosophy not of the ivory tower, but of the battlefield and the throne, tested and forged in real life. So, what are some of the key moral principles Marcus wrestled with in these journals? Let's highlight a few recurring themes in Meditations, which also reflect core Stoic moral philosophy. Above all, Marcus emphasizes that living with virtue, exhibiting qualities like justice, honesty, courage, self-control, and kindness, is the only thing that truly matters for a happy life. No matter what fate throws at you, you always have the ability to choose to respond virtuously. In Stoic ethics, everything outside your character is ultimately secondary. Marcus reminds himself that only his own actions and choices can really harm or help his soul. Other external things, like loss, pain, or pleasure, are not truly good or evil. Paraphrasing the Stoic credo, he notes that while we might prefer health to sickness or wealth to poverty, such things don't determine whether we are good persons. Only our virtue, or lack of it, does. This perspective helped Marcus keep his moral compass even as emperorship entailed luxury and absolute power. He tried not to be Caesarified, as he jokes in one entry, meaning not to let the power go to his head and turn him into a tyrant. If it is not right, do not do it. If it is not true, do not say it, he wrote, boiling virtue down to simple guidelines of integrity. At one point, Marcus chides himself. Waste no more time arguing about what a good man should be. Be one. In other words, stop theorizing about morality and just live morally. That urgent call to action over rhetoric, be a good man now, don't procrastinate, is one of Marcus Aurelius's most famous maxims, and it captures his down-to-earth approach to ethics. A constant refrain in Meditations is the shortness of life and the inevitability of change. Marcus witnessed so much death and upheaval that he became keenly aware of life's fragility. But instead of despairing, he tried to find freedom in accepting mortality. He often instructed himself to live each day as if it could be his last, because it very well could be. Since it is possible that thou mayest depart from life this very moment, regulate every act and thought accordingly, he advises sternly. In plainer language, you could die right now. Let that determine what you do and say and think. This wasn't meant in a morbid way, but as a wake-up call to focus on what truly matters, virtue, goodness, and not to waste time on trivialities. Marcus also uses the vast sweep of time as a tool to put problems in perspective. He reminds himself how many great men of old are now long gone and mostly forgotten. So why should he obsess over legacy or fear the future? In one passage, he writes that whether you live for 50 years or 5,000 years, In the end, what is the difference? Because eternity swallows all, and we all only ever live in the present moment. Such reflections helped him combat anxiety about death or loss. They encouraged an attitude of gratitude and urgency. Be grateful for the life you have, but don't cling to it. Do good now, for tomorrow is not promised. Marcus likened life's natural end to ripe fruit falling from a tree, an event to be accepted as part of nature, not something to rage against. This stoic acceptance of impermanence gave Marcus strength in the face of plague and personal bereavement. It's a lesson to his readers as well. Remembering our mortality can teach us to live more earnestly and kindly now. Marcus Aurelius saw himself as a citizen of a larger community, not just Rome, but the cosmos itself. Stoicism taught him that human beings are all part of a greater whole, like individual cells in one body, or bees in a hive. This meant his role as emperor was, in essence, a service to mankind. He often writes about working for the sake of the cosmopolis, the universal city of humanity. In practical terms, Marcus strove to be a just ruler. He passed laws to help the vulnerable, widows, slaves, orphans. He tried to restrain cruelty, and by example, he showed modesty and fairness. Ancient commentators admired that he and Lucius Verus behaved civiliter, like ordinary citizens, without excessive pomp. In his reflections, Marcus emphasizes kindness and understanding toward others, even difficult people. One of his most famous exercises comes early in Meditations. Each morning he would remind himself, "Today I shall meet people who are meddling, ungrateful, arrogant, dishonest, jealous, and surly, and that they act that way out of ignorance of good and evil. But I, who understand the nature of goodness, will not be harmed by them," he continues. "Nor should I become angry or hate them. We are made for cooperation, like feet or hands. To act against one another is against nature." This inner pep talk prepared him to respond to others with patience and rationality, rather than outrage. It's essentially Marcus psyching himself up to stay calm and do his duty to others, no matter how they behave. He believed strongly in the Stoic idea that humans are rational, social animals meant to work together. "What injures the hive, injures the bee," he wrote, quoting an image that encapsulates the Stoic ethic of unity. Therefore, even as an emperor, Marcus saw himself not as an overlord, but as a part of a bigger organism, responsible to his fellow humans and to the gods in nature. His duty was to play his role to the best of his ability and to act according to his principles, come what may. In Marcus's Stoic practice, a major theme is mastering one's own mind. You have power over your mind, not outside events. Realize this and you will find strength, he writes in one entry, summarizing a key Stoic insight. External events, whether a war, an insult, or a sudden misfortune, are often beyond our control. What is in our control is how we perceive and respond to those events. Marcus constantly coached himself to examine his impressions and not be carried away by anger, fear, or desire. If someone insulted him, he tried to remember, "That's just their action. My reaction is up to me." It's not things that upset us, but our judgments about things, Epictetus had taught, and Marcus took this to heart. When facing criticism or adversity, he reminded himself not to take it personally or to choose a wiser response. For example, during the Cassius Rebellion, we saw how Marcus paused and chose forgiveness over fury, a perfect illustration of controlling one's emotional response in line with reason. This self-discipline extended to all areas of life. Marcus also tried to moderate his own appetites and habits. He ate and dressed simply. He resisted vanity, and he maintained what we might call a balanced mind. Notably, he warns himself against indulgence in leisure or literature at the expense of real philosophical work on his character. To keep his mind strong, Marcus practiced these Stoic mental exercises daily, a form of spiritual training. Writing in the journal was itself one such exercise. By articulating his thoughts and challenges on paper, he could objectify them and gain clarity. For instance, if he felt anger toward someone, he could write out a reminder to forgive ignorance and recall that he too has flaws. Through reasoned reflection, Marcus aimed to become the master of his emotions rather than a slave to them. This inner fortitude, Stoics believed, is what allows a person to remain virtuous and unshaken in the face of life's storms. As we can see, the wisdom of meditations is very much woven into Marcus Aurelius's life story. There's a poignant harmony between the man and his philosophy. When we read his words, we aren't just reading abstract ethics. We're seeing a ruler applying moral principles day to day, in decisions of state, in how he treated friends and enemies, in how he endured pain and loss. Marcus's struggles make his gentle exhortations and meditations all the more inspiring, because we know he walked the talk. He was writing these passages perhaps after negotiating a peace treaty, or after burying a comrade, or after nearly dying of illness. It was field-tested philosophy. And because of that, his writings have resonated through the ages, far beyond the ramparts of his military camp. Marcus Aurelius likely never imagined his private diary would be read by anyone, let alone that it would secure his legacy as one of the greatest moral philosophers of the West. Meditations survived through a winding path of manuscripts after his death, and it gradually gained recognition as a classic of wisdom literature. For many generations, especially in the West, Marcus Aurelius has stood as a model of the philosopher king, the ruler who tried to govern justly and live virtuously in accordance with philosophical principles. The English poet Matthew Arnold famously described Marcus Aurelius as the ruling brain of the world in his time, yet one who was universally acknowledged as a benevolent and noble soul. Machiavelli, no naive observer of power, pointed to Marcus's reign as a golden time and praised him as unassuming, a lover of justice, hater of cruelty, sympathetic and kind. Such praise across centuries underscores how singular Marcus's reputation is among monarchs. He wasn't remembered for building grand monuments or for military conquests, though he defended the empire bravely. He was remembered for his character. In the bloody ledger of Roman history, Marcus Aurelius's page is one of the few that isn't stained by tyranny or madness. It's as if his experiment of living out Stoicism on the throne really did leave a shining example for posterity. What can we, today, learn from Marcus Aurelius? Although nearly two millennia separate us, Marcus's voice in meditations feels very close and relevant. His reminders to be good, to forgive others, to accept what we cannot change, and to treasure each day have a timeless quality. Modern readers often find comfort in his words during their own hard times. Marcus's life shows that philosophy is not just theory. It's a way of life, a practical guide for how to navigate the ups and downs of the human experience. He demonstrates that even someone at the pinnacle of human authority can choose humility over arrogance and compassion over cruelty. In a world often obsessed with power and success, Marcus Aurelius gently redirects us to consider wisdom and virtue as the higher pursuits. As we conclude this episode, imagine Marcus Aurelius, not in a grand palace, but in a simple tent on the front lines of a distant campaign. It's night. The air is cold. The emperor, wrapped in a cloak, bends over a small oil lamp with a notebook. The sounds of the camp, the crackle of fires, the distant clank of armor surround him. By the flickering light, he writes a few lines to himself. Perhaps the thought that the best revenge is not to be like your enemy, or a reflection that life is but a moment, and our acts echo in eternity only through their goodness. He puts down the pen, extinguishes the lamp, and rests, ready to face another uncertain day with equanimity. In those quiet moments, Marcus was not a world conqueror or a lofty philosopher. He was a man trying to be good and reminding himself how to do so. And that is the enduring image of Marcus Aurelius, an emperor who remained at heart a humble student of virtue.
Thank you for listening to this journey into the life and moral philosophy of Marcus Aurelius. May his example of wisdom under pressure and his gentle counsel in the meditations inspire us in our own lives to waste no more time and strive to become the good people we aspire to be, no matter what challenges we face. Until next time, take care and keep reflecting on the good, the bad, and all that lies within your power to choose. Farewell.